Today's episode of How Did I Get Here is brought to you by Urban Squared Realty in Austin, Texas. They specialize in urban sales and urban leasing. They can sell you a house or condo, or they can lease you a house or condo, or find you a place to live. You know, a lot of times finding a place to live can be really overwhelming, and you don't really know exactly what you're looking for. You can't really tell by an ad on Craigslist or an ad in the paper or something. But these guys, they're pros. You call them up. You call up my friend here, James Hill, at Urban Squared Realty. His number is 512-947-3135. That's 512-947-3135. You call up James Hill, and he can find you a place. He can take all the guesswork out. You can tell him how much you're looking to pay, where you want to live, you know, how big of a place you want, what part of town you want to live in. It's just that easy. So go to urban2realty.com. That's urban, the number 2, realty.com. That's Urban Squared Realty, James Hill, 512-947-3135. Interest rates are historically low. He told me that earlier today. And he can also tell you, like, do you know how much your house is worth? Why don't you call James and find out? A couple of years ago, like 2 years ago, I was living with a girl, and we broke up, and the place was hers that we were living, so I had to find a place to live. And I knew James, and I called James, and I told him, because when I went on Craigslist and when I went on you know, looking for a place, it is overwhelming. You don't really know exactly what to do. So I called James, and I told him my dilemma, and then I didn't even know that he did that. This was part of it. I thought he just sold places, but he also does the leasing and helps you find a place. So you tell him how much you want to spend, what area of town you want to live in, and he zeroes it down to places, and you go with him. And you take the guesswork out, and you don't have to drive all over town. It takes forever. So Urban Squared Realty. His name is James Hill. The number is 512-947-3135. You can find them at urban2realty.com. If you're moving here from out of town, you might have just been here for South by Southwest, you know, you might be thinking about giving old James a call. So there you go. Now, back to the show.
And you may ask yourself,
how did I get here? And now here is your host, Tommy Maldi.
When we talked all night.
Hey, all right. So I played my first solo show in a long time this weekend on Sunday at a Hotel Vegas here in Austin. I did a show with Danny Malone, and man, it was really fun. I had a great time, and it turns out that I'm doing some more this month. So for the next 3 Sundays, April 8th, and then whatever the 2 Sundays are after that, I am playing solo shows at Hotel Vegas here in Austin. So if you're here, the early shows are at 7, and then at 8 o'clock, my friend Danny Malone takes the stage. He is incredible. He's a great songwriter. I'm really glad. I've never seen him play alone. And so that was really exciting to see him. So if you're around, come on out to the show and check it out. And now on the last Sunday of April, which is April 29th, at 7 p.m. at Hotel Vegas here in Austin, Texas, we are doing a live How Did I Get Here? My guest will be Danny Malone, who I'm doing these shows with. I don't know if we're going to add more people to the list. Maybe we will. I don't know. Jessica and I have some thinking to do. So yeah, man, if you're in Austin on Sunday, April 29th, please come out. And I will be interviewing Danny Malone at 7 p.m. at Hotel Vegas on a stage. You can laugh, you can cry, you can scream at me, and you can stab me. I'm just kidding. You cannot stab me. My guest today, T-Double, has blurred the distinctions commonly associated with entrepreneurs, songwriters, producers, and poets. Armed with a freestyle grace that can only be witnessed in person, he has let his lyrics flow, defined with bass lines that have given them power to shape a community. I met T-Double a couple weeks ago, or I guess 3 or 4 weeks ago at South by Southwest. I don't even know how long ago it was. At a party, Dave Dart introduced me to him. We talked a little bit at the party, and then I jammed some of his tunes that week and listened to him, and then he came over a couple weeks ago, and we sat down and had a talk. He just turns out he's a great guy with a lot of really good ideas, and you know, it takes a lot to run your own business, to make music and to sell it and to generate income from it. And so it's interesting to hear someone their story and how they're able to capitalize on their art and what they do. So T-Double's name is Tyranny Johnson. He's a really great guy. And so without further ado, people, this is T-Double.
I was just walking, really nowhere to go. So I thought I'd walk in the studio. Yes, I'm cool with the rhyming. It's perfect timing, lyrical vocal alignment. I'm in inside of the rhythm. T-Double is one by design. All the people come hear him and cheer him. Now witness the way that he put all these words into motion. So close in, because I just might have to whisper, keeping the snare and the drums much crisper for the listeners. And if you ever get stranded, make sure that you have this on hand. It's surely a must have. T-Double, he learned from the aliens, must have. While you lay in your mud bath, I keep asking you, where is the love at, huh?
So you're on your 18th, you just put out your 18th album?
Yes,
you
I did.
You just put it out?
Just put it out in February.
My God. Goddess Galactic, 18 albums. That's 18. A lot of albums. So so you're not like, you didn't just come out last year then?
No, I've been, I probably recorded my first actual, I guess you could say, album probably back when I was like 9 years old, when, you know, on cassette, and I, you know, mailed that to Warner Brothers. So I've been, you know, I've been doing my music my whole life, man. You
how,
know,
what, like, what year was that? How did you,
oh,
how did
God,
you, how did you find?
I don't want to say the year.
The address for Warner
Brothers.
Yeah,
well, you know, I grew up in a household where my mother was a teacher, and you know, my father was a janitor, but he always had music in the house. So, you know, Christmas time or holidays, you know, all the other, you know, kids wanted bicycles and the usual stuff. And I would tell my mom I want a keyboard. So she finally got me one. And
like this?
Yeah, like a little Casio something. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I would go to Sears, I think, and go to the electronics department with my keyboard. I would take one of my dad's cassette tapes that he had blues recorded on or something, and I would put it in the jam boxes in the electric department and put my keyboard in front of it. That's how I recorded my demos at Sears, my early demos. And
so like you would put the tape over the little holes on the cassette,
yeah,
so you could record over
exactly
again.
Yeah. Like toilet tissue or whatever. And I put it in there at Sears. And I would record as many songs as I could till they told me to leave.
Yeah.
And you know, my mom would be shopping for vacuum cleaners or something. I always went with her.
So wait, you play the drums and like a beat from
your
Casio.
I would have a beat up,
and then you just rap over it.
Exactly.
The microphone's on the boombox.
Exactly.
You
know,
that's how I started.
Yeah, the old Casio, you know, they had like the Bossa Nova and the Waltz presets.
Are you kidding me? Yeah,
yeah,
it's right here.
So I would just rap over those and make songs at home. Go, you know, I guess you could say now it'd be pre-production.
Yeah.
And then I would go to, you know, Sears and record the song. After I recorded it, like, you know, in one trip, I could probably do like maybe 2-3 songs before they told me to stop. And go home, and my dad had all these records. And so I would tell my mom, like, I want to do this. And she'd be like, well, research it.
Yeah.
Find out where you got to send the music and whatever. So I would go through my dad's records. And one record that was always a constant was Prince.
Yeah.
So I got a Prince record. You know, he was on Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
And I would look at the back of the record, and it always said, produced, recorded, arranged, composed.
Right. Yeah.
By Prince.
Yeah.
So that's got into my mindset, like, that's how you make records.
Yeah.
One person does it all. So that's how I've been doing it for years. So I got that record, wrote down the address. Me and my mom, this was when Austin used to be considered spread apart, so you would have to take 2-3 buses to get somewhere.
So you grew up here?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
So we would catch like 2-3 buses downtown to the post office and mail my demos, mail them to Warner Brothers, you know. And they, you know, they would send me back the usual letter, like, thanks for your submission.
You would get something back.
Yeah, they would write back like, thanks for your submission, but we're not looking for what you're doing right now. But, you know, the usual, I guess,
You're not looking for a 9-year-old hip-hop artist? What is wrong with you?
Well, actually, the funny part is
my first
demos was me singing, not rapping.
Okay.
So I can remember one of my first songs was called Strawberry Shortcake, about a girl. And that was one of my first demos. I didn't really get into rapping.
Is there any way you can recall that song at all?
At all, no.
I will give you a dollar.
My mother has that tape, and she's holding over my head like blackmail.
I bet she is.
Till, you know,
Well, you think about it now. If there's anything good, you could take it, sample it, and use it as like a hook and exactly. in like a song you do.
Exactly,
which would be kick ass, right?
Exactly.
So what inspired you to do it? Like, what? Who were your heroes? Like, were you watching MTV? So you were into Prince, obviously.
Yeah.
And what year was that? Was that like?
That was like maybe early 80s. Oh, okay. Maybe, something like that. Okay. You know. But it was, you know, it wasn't really like, back then it wasn't really like MTV and it wasn't really like videos and all that. It was mostly right. like my dad, you know, always played records. You know, he would play Otis Redding and Earth, Wind & Fire. And after school, you know, I went to Maplewood Elementary. So after school, all the kids would want to walk by my house
yeah.
because my dad always had these huge speakers in the door yeah. playing Earth, Wind & Fire.
Yeah.
Prince. He was one of the first, you know, cats in our neighborhood to play, you know, hip hop, Sugar Hill, yeah. Sequence, all the early stuff. So yeah. kids would go out of their way to go by my house
yeah.
to hear my dad playing these records. So I just grew up around music and, you know, my uncle's real talented. My grandmother, you know, she sculpts and painted. And so my family's real artistic.
Yeah.
Music just happened to be my thing.
Yeah.
So.
Amazing. So you got this Casio. That was your first instrument. Did you learn yeah. how to actually play it or did you
not really learn
how to use it?
Yeah. I knew, you know. You could push the presets, like I say, Bossa Nova or whatever, and
right.
you could press certain keys and it'll like kind of give you a generic rhythm with it and octaves and whatever. So I would just kind of go with that. I wasn't really thinking too much of the musical end.
Yeah, I like that you didn't even like have a talent show. You just yeah. went right to Warner Brothers. Yeah. Like you were not fucking around.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever gotten. I've never been in a talent show. Well, I have one time.
I've never been in a talent show.
I was one time, but it was somebody else who was performing, and I was with them.
Yeah.
I've never personally done my own right. been a talent show. I just went straight. This is what I want to do.
Yeah, I thought it I was too right. big for talent shows. I remember, like, in junior high, like, what? No way.
Yeah, are you kidding me? What?
What do I need a talent yeah. show for? I need yeah. Warner Brothers.
Exactly. So that's what I went for.
So what did you do after that? Like, are you sending demos? You write songs? Did you learn other instruments? Did you take any lessons or anything? What did you do?
I've never taken lessons with instruments. I just, you know, after I did that, you know, and I got the letter back from Warner Brothers, I was like, this is it.
I love that though.
This is what I'm doing. You know, even though it could have been a generic letter that they sent out to everybody.
Sure, sure.
You know, which as we get older, we see that's what they do. But when I was young, I was like, wow, this is amazing. So I was like, kept recording songs. Every year, I told my mom I want another keyboard. Now I want my own jam box.
So you don't have to go to the studio at Sears.
Yes, I can record my own thing at home and get my own microphone. And you know, then I got to junior high and I met some other guys who were kind of like minded. So then we made a group.
Okay.
And then, you know, as a
And
group,
what guy, was it a vocal group, like yeah, Boyz II Men yeah. kind of thing or something?
He became my DJ.
Okay.
So that's when I started incorporating more of the hip-hop. Like, I would go to his house, and we would go to, like, thrift stores and buy James Brown records. And
right.
Then we'd go to a pawn shop and get, like, a little Roland drum machine. We
yeah,
started,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
upping the gear. Like, we'd save all our money. Like, we got $60. Let's go get us a drum machine.
Yeah. Did you get an 808, or did you
I don't know. It was one of the little silver ones, so it might have been, like, a 606 something at the time. But we got that, and then we upgraded the Casio to an SK5
Hello.
When it first started sampling.
Yeah.
You know, we're big time now.
Big time.
So, but even then, it was like there was no MIDI. You
right.
know, there was
right.
no, you couldn't
right.
sync them.
Still
so every
right,
song
right.
was me basically playing the drums and the samples for 4 minutes straight, and then go back and lay the vocals. So we had to do everything live. So all my songs then were just me live on the drums.
Wow.
With the samples,
how were you recording
everything.
Them onto just one cassette, or did you have yeah. a four track?
We
or
did
something?
It all one take.
Shit.
It was all one take. It was never like lay the drums and then go back and lay this. Because we didn't know about four tracks. And
right.
We just like, okay, we got a jam box.
And so like
we got
what,
a TDK,
what,
let's do it.
What year was that? Like, I'm just trying to get a sense of what was going on in the big world of hip-hop.
That might have been.
Like, who was big at the time? Who were you guys like trying to be like?
That's the thing. We weren't trying to be like anybody. You know what I mean? Like,
I don't mean like that, but who inspired? Like, who were you?
Well,
like, this guy's
My whole thing was I really started listening to, like, LL Cool J.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I really dug his intensity and, you know, his delivery.
Yeah.
You know, and I was I want to rap like that, you know, but still make sense and have people understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So me and my friend, his name was Charles, and we created a group called Dope Melody. So we got these jackets, and we got airbrush all on the jackets, and we would go to the mall and hang out, and we were like, you know, local junior high hip-hop stars.
I'm thinking of the airbrushing looking a lot like Breaking 2 Electric Boogaloo.
That's exactly
font.
What it was.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Our jackets were red, so since they were red, we had it airbrushed like bricks,
uh-huh.
and then we had like T-Double and, you know, Chili Fresh and Dope Melody.
How did you get that name?
T-Double actually came from in junior high because I used to be called Whistle T. And I got Whistle T from elementary when I was younger, because the older kids would call me Whistle T because when I saw, you know, the pretty girls, I would whistle at the girls.
Yeah.
So it was Whistle Tyranny. Yeah. But then I broke it down to Whistle T. But when I got to junior high, I would tell everybody I was an exciting entertainer.
Yeah.
So a friend of mine named Mark, I can remember all this like it was yesterday. My friend Mark said, "Well, why don't you put the two E's behind the T?
Yeah.
And call you Whistle T." So it was Whistle T E E, and then as that evolved, people started calling me T Double E.
Okay.
And then that shortened to T Double.
Okay.
So that's the transition.
There we go. So I haven't even introduced you. We've been talking for like 15 minutes. And my guest today is T-Double.
What up?
He's a hip-hop. You consider yourself a rapper? Like, do you got, I mean.
I can rap. I think of myself as.
You're an
artist. Definitely an artist.
Yeah. You definitely are.
An artist, yeah.
Yeah. So, so let's go back because I'm really enjoying this. So you guys, what was the name of the band again?
Dope Melody.
Dope Melody. You guys would hang out at the mall with your jackets.
Yeah.
And did you perform anywhere?
We would do a few shows, like maybe at Doris Miller Auditorium or, you know, different Black History events or whatever. And I can remember one show, you know, I know I'm sounding like, you know, an old man. Like
I can
remember back then.
Yeah, yeah.
But I remember one show, like I would always tell my mom never to come to my shows. Because I would always be embarrassed for her to see me performing. So I was like...
Did you have like some like misogynistic shit going on?
My music has always been clean. Because I always looked at it like, if I can't perform my song in front of my mother, I don't want to be doing it. So all my music has always been clean. I've never talked about drugs, badly about women, any of that. Because my mother...
You never lived in a world where you were on T-Double, I have to say this one thing. First of all, saying T-Double and what I'm about to say, I sound so white saying it that this is almost like a comedy interview for you with me because what I was about to say, so you were never on any Hustle or anything?
No. I grew up around hustlers. I grew up around, you know, drug dealers.
And what kept you out of it? Like, did you get an allowance? Other ideas?
A lot of it was the fear of my parents. You know what I mean? My mom was always like, if you get arrested for something, you're going to sit in jail. You know, and my dad was like 6'4".
Yeah.
He didn't play. He was real strict. He was, you know. So when you have that around you, like, I'm not going to do anything wrong. Like, I'm going to stay on the right path. Yeah. Plus, I always looked at that as being.
She was a teacher and he was a janitor. These are people that work.
Yeah. And I always looked at it like, you know, I always felt like I had talent. I always had more to offer.
Yeah.
So I always felt like if I'm out there hustling or doing that, I could be at home writing more songs.
Okay.
Like, I always wanted to create. So I felt like that always took me away from me creating.
Right.
You know, so.
So that's really where you and your friends were at the time.
Right.
Okay, so what did you guys do next? You're getting records at the thrift stores.
Yeah, we're going to Hastings at the mall when they sold records. And, you know, we're buying records and we're saving our money. And we're like, okay, now we got the drum machines and this. Now we need to buy a microphone. And now...
Yeah,
you know, we saved up our money so my DJ can buy some turntables because we know we needed that for shows.
Right.
So we were real focused on our goal of where we wanted to be and what we wanted to do.
And did you have a job? What did you do?
I had a few jobs. Like I worked at like Shortstop Hamburgers and, you know, the mall. I worked in almost every store in Highland Mall, you know, because I was like, you know, where else am I going to get the money? You know what I mean?
Right.
I want to get it the right way and spend it on the right stuff. So I didn't dress all flashy. I never spent my money on like the newest tennis shoes, the newest Jordans. I was like...
Did you wear a Kangol at any point?
No, back then it was just baseball hats. Okay. I didn't really get into Kangols till like maybe eighth grade.
When you wore the baseball hat, did you wear the hat that would symbolize what you were trying, like some message
every hat? Every hat I had always had a T on it.
Okay, cool.
So it might have been Texas Rangers whatever. It always had a T. So that was, you know, I was, you know, now when you look back on it, I was always into branding. I guess you can call it now.
Yeah.
I was always like, when you see that hat, that's me.
Yeah.
Just like when you see me now on different pictures, I'm wearing my Kango. I'm not wearing one day, but I'm usually wearing my Kango.
It always seems to me like in the world of hip-hop, all of the guys in hip-hop have a lot more of an idea of business and almost consider themselves, like a guy like P. Diddy or something, considers himself a businessman far more than an artistic dude.
Right.
Did you feel, not that obviously you had a real strong art thing, but did you feel like you knew what you were doing with the branding? Like, people will know me when they see me.
That's
a really brilliant,
you know. That's what I hoped, you know what I mean? Yeah. I hope that when people saw me, you know, by the quality of my music and the way I carried myself that they would be like, okay, there's T-Double.
What were you guys? Were you guys doing mixtapes and shit and passing them out?
We were doing the mixtapes. Like we would record. You know, I would go to his house after school or early in the morning or lunch.
So this is all still in high school.
Yeah, and wow. We would. You know, this was when at Reagan High School, and we would record you said earlier, I have 18 albums. Was like, if you put together all the albums I've really made, it's probably up to like 50.
Yeah.
Because me and Charles, we would record like it was nobody's business. Like we were like, okay, we got to make another song. We got 10 minutes. We can knock out two songs.
So at that point, can I ask you this? How were you putting the songs together? Were you taking a sample from one song and then building from that, measure thing or whatever?
Well, back then it was, you really had to be more creative. Where now, you have Pro Tools and you can load it in audio and chop and splice and whatever. But back then with the SK-5, there was like four pads.
Right.
Each pad was maybe half a second long.
The SK-5 is pretty much like was the standard thing that everyone had.
If you ask almost any hip-hop producer, like, SK-5, I started
They still
that.
Bring them into the studio and shit.
Exactly.
Them.
So each pad had like, they had eight pads.
Yeah.
Four of the pads had like a lion on it, different, standard factory sounds. It had four other pads.
I like how the standard factory sound on the keyboard is a lion.
Yeah, it was.
Like, when do you use that?
Yeah, I don't know. It was and a gunshot. Pew! And then the other one was like four other pads with, half a second. So I would take a horn hit from a James Brown record, like a
boom. Yeah.
That's one pad. A kick sound, snare sound, and maybe a hi-hat sound.
Yeah.
And then, or we would have the rolling having the hi-hat, and I would just do the kick
to be playing in time because you didn't have a way to sync it up in the time.
So a lot of the early songs we had, the beat was off because there was no quantizing or whatever, but that gave it its human feel.
Yeah.
Where you'd be like, okay, they're really making this music. Now,
were there a lot of other dudes doing the same thing? Like, were you getting mixtapes as you were passing them out? Like, oh, yeah, were the dudes that hang out at Barton Creek Mall or whatever? Yeah,
there were dudes who wanted to do it. Like, a lot of people wanted to make music. A lot of people wanted to create their own thing, but nobody really did it.
Money to get all the shit. And
at that time, nobody was thinking like me, like, if I take my keyboard to Sears and
I
can record.
Yeah.
Nobody thought that. They were like, I got to buy all this at once.
Right.
I did it piece by piece. Me and Charles did it piece by piece, and we built up that name where we would go to shows, and people were like, is Dope Melody going to be here?
Yeah.
Those guys are, pretty awesome.
Well, when you say you go to shows, just would you get up and perform?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Like, how does that work?
Yeah. Well, we would take,
I mean, is that like the equivalent of an open mic or something?
Not really. We would be booked,
Okay. Okay.
It'd be a lineup of acts.
Okay.
So we would take our cassette that, we recorded, because the way we did it, we would have a dual cassette tape.
Okay.
So we'd record the beat and everything, direct for 4 minutes on one tape. We put that in tape, A. Then we take another cassette tape, put that in tape B, and hook a mic up to it.
Yeah.
So while tape A is running, I add my vocals to tape B.
Yeah.
And that becomes the final mix.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it's all done at once. Like, you can't go back and mix the vocals. You can't balance it. You can't do all the things you can do now. It was like one take.
And how did you perform it live like that?
Yeah. We would just take the first tape of the instrumental and just go and perform. Okay. You know what I mean? We would just, wherever.
And you were the MC, were the other guys like with you?
It would be Charles behind me on the turntables.
Yeah.
And back then, turntables were expensive.
You still with Charles?
I haven't seen him in years.
Okay, man.
But he would be on one turntable and the other one would be a cassette tape.
Yeah.
So we just play the tape all the way through. It's not like now you can skip through songs and speed up your show. It's like we do the whole 4 or 5 minutes of the song.
Yeah.
So with that helped me develop more into my freestyling because, you only have so many lyrics and you got this extra space. What are you going to do? Just stand up there and look crazy, or are you going to keep entertaining?
Right.
So that helped me develop my freestyle and my lyrical skills there.
So let me ask you this about freestyling and lyrical skills. One of the things that's always escaped me is, I can't talk that fast. I really can't. I mean, I've loved hip-hop for so long, and I love rap music, and I sound so horrible doing it. I sound like 1987.
Right,
as far as I can go. Like, my name is Johnny.
Exactly.
I like salami.
Yeah, exactly.
So, one of the things is like the access to words and to always have access to this incredible vocabulary, to always be able to throw in a word And man, I would say that 7 times out of 10, when I've seen someone freestyle, they're bringing in words that not only rhyme, but they actually make sense and can oftentimes be like bitingly humorous or attacking when someone's battling somebody else.
Right.
Did you read a lot? Did you get yourself? Did you have an incredible vocabulary because your mom was a teacher?
Right.
Or like, how do hip hop dudes access that?
I think you know it. Every artist is different, you know what I mean? But with me, what really got my freestyling up was, you know, of course my mom's a teacher, so she was always like, there are so many more words you can use besides curse words when you're rapping.
Right.
Like a lot of rappers, when they freestyle, the curse words are their segue words.
Right.
When they're at a loss for a word, they, and then continue, or, and then continue.
Right.
She was like, there's so many words that
and
you
they,
can
they
use.
Have go-to phrases where they can go when they're stuck with something to move
which
on.
Which everybody does.
Thing.
You know, I even have those, you know what I mean? So I'm not knocking those, but I'm just saying as far as, you know, using the words, like freestyling to me is a unique art form. It's something that can't be taught and it's real difficult to learn because when you're freestyling, you're really tapping into other chambers of your brain because in order to freestyle properly, when I'm saying a sentence, I'm already 4 sentences ahead in order for it to rhyme and make sense.
Yeah, that's the part that always confuses
Yeah, because if you're just rapping right now in the moment, it's going to be difficult for you to get words together because your thought process has to be further ahead than where you are right now. So it's, you know, it's a technique. Like sometimes when I'm freestyling, I feel like I basically blank out and go to a higher mental plane especially since sometimes I freestyle so fast that I'm 8 bars ahead of what you're hearing right now in my thought process, if
That's
that makes
brilliant.
Sense.
Yeah. And so you would go and you would freestyle at the end of these songs. And then all of a sudden you started kind of developing a following.
Yeah.
People were expecting to see you places.
Exactly.
And, so where did you go from there? Like after high school, what did you and Charles do?
Well, after high school, you know, Charles, you know, the group just kind of, you know, the whole gangster scene of hip hop came in NWA and all that started
in the late
developing.
80s and early 90s,
so a lot of artists started going that route. That wasn't me. Like, I grew up around that, but I didn't do that. So I always wanted my music to be authentic.
What did you think about? Like, what did you think of, like, Public Enemy and NWA?
Great. I loved it. You know what I mean? You can love something without pretending to be it. You know what I mean? Like, I love the pro-blackness of P.E. and X-Clan and all that, and I love NWA with Straight Outta Compton and all those raw rhymes because that's what they were living. That's what they saw in their environment. And we had that here too in Austin, so I could relate to it. But I necessarily wasn't doing that. Like, I wasn't selling drugs. I wasn't, you know, pimping girls. I wasn't. So why would I rap about it?
But did you feel any of the plight that of like Public Enemy, like just feeling that just because of the color of your skin, you were being judged by other people or sized up?
Yeah.
Almost like racial profiling.
Yeah,
like, hey, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, here at the mall.
And it does exist. You know, I mean, it's, you know, because it's crazy, you know, where if you're of color, you know, you always got to remember that that's what you are and never think that the world is going to be this beautiful, let's hug everybody type of place yet because it's so many years of that history here. You know, like before I came here, I went to a music store I won't name, but I got treated that way where I walk in, nobody says hello, but there are 7 people at the door. I walk around the store, I'm looking at stuff, you know, and I'm there to buy, I'm there to purchase. Okay. And nobody says nothing. Then when I'm leaving, all of a sudden somebody's like, oh, can I help you? Like, we didn't know you were in the store. Well, you all saw me when I walked in, so I'm not going to spend my money here.
Yeah.
You know, and that's for a guy, you know, I won 2 Austin Music Awards.
Yeah.
I have my own day named after me in Austin. And, you know, and I can't even get a hello in a store. So it always makes itself, and this is 2012, and it always makes itself, you never forget it. So,
well, you know, it's interesting because at that time that you're talking about when NWA and Public Enemy came out and Ice-T was really blowing up at the time too, like a lot of people, there was like a, like I'm Cuban, and in the late 90s, there was like the whole Latin music, you know, with Ricky Martin.
Totally.
And then all of a sudden there was like the Buena Vista Social Club where we're like in the movies and like people are directing and, you know, there's a Cuban guy on a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool to be on there. Mm-hmm. And at that time, the same thing was happening almost in black culture with, you know, at that time was when Public Enemy was coming out, was like when Do the Right Thing came out.
Right.
And then a lot of other like Boys in the Hood followed and stuff like that. Really amazing. yeah. things. Did you, yeah. what, where were you with all of that? I know that that wasn't your life.
Yeah.
What was going on at the time, but more of like a do the right thing. Is that, did you feel like, because to me, Austin has always seemed like, I know it's an educated city
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't, it acts like it's not, a racist city or, mm-hmm. or in any way segregated
mm-hmm.
but I feel in the music scene that it's like that. I mean
it's like
not that people are actively racist, but right. you know,
I look at it like, you know, I'm one of the advocates of urban music in Austin, and I look at it like we have to regain our culture, so to speak, and be more business minded and be more direct with what we want and not just settle for what promoters or booking agents offer us. Like, I've done shows with rock groups where, you know, the compensation is thousands of dollars for everybody involved. And then I've done shows with hip hop acts where each act might get $50.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But we're still putting as much time into our
music.
The
promoters like taking the money.
Yeah. So we're still putting as much time into the creation of our art. It's still art. And it shouldn't be
totally.
It shouldn't be devalued because it's hip hop and right. we're not rock and singer songwriter.
Right, exactly.
Whatever, you know. Because if you look at it, like, you know, even during South by Southwest this year, the biggest shows to hit this town were hip hop.
Yeah.
Jay Z.
Yeah.
50 Cent.
Yeah.
Eminem.
Yeah.
Lil Wayne.
Yeah.
You know, come on. There's a huge
Same
dollar
as last
value.
Year,
there.
Like Kanye's show was
exactly.
the biggest show.
There's
the
a
thing.
Huge there's a huge dollar value within it, and we have to reclaim that. That value in our music, you know.
It is kind of weird that it's not reflected in a local way, because like Jay-Z can come here and sell out a thing, but like I don't yeah. know. I mean I don't know how you or Overlord or
right.
I don't even know, are the Dirty Worms still playing?
Yeah.
They are?
Yeah. The thing is, with a lot of us hip hop artists, once we, you know, get to a point where our career is kind of sustaining itself and really moving, we get bigger shows outside of Austin.
That's what I'm looking
yeah,
to find out.
Yeah, we sell.
Well,
we,
doesn't it suck that, you know,
it does.
There aren't bigger shows
it
here?
It does, you know.
So where do you go to play? Like Houston and Dallas?
Houston, Dallas. You know, I tour with Dale the Funky Homo Sapien a lot.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, AC Alone. You know, a lot of cats who are really playing festivals and doing big events.
Yeah.
You know, they find me
you
from...
You tour as his opening act is what you're
yeah,
saying?
Okay. Yeah. So they find me because, you know, I network hard. And whenever they come to town, I'm always there like... Hey, I got some new music.
Yeah.
This is what I'm doing. Like, I'm always productive. I don't let
You're very prolific.
Yeah, I don't let the stagnation of the town
yeah.
stop me from creating.
Because you're not just doing it here.
Yeah.
You're doing it
thing.
For the world. Yeah.
yeah. If you think of just like, you know, because if you get in the mind state like,
right.
wow, I can't, you know, 100 people don't even come to see me in Austin, I'm done. But that's just Austin.
Yeah. yeah.
You know, and then you yeah. got to look at what Austin is. Austin is really somewhat of a following, marketable city. A lot
yeah.
of people come to Austin to market their product, to
yeah.
market their wares,
yeah.
for people here in Austin to buy and purchase.
Right.
So it's always like if you go somewhere else and you become large or you win a Grammy and you come back, then everybody loves you. And Austin kind of has that feeling where Austin is a great city because I'm still here. You know, it's great for me to do my music. You know, I breathe this town. But it's like once you get really successful here, then all of a sudden Austin reclaims you as theirs. Like we always knew he was going to be great. We
yeah,
always
yeah,
saw
yeah,
it,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But before that, it's like T-Double, who cares? You know, Overlord, who cares? Bavu, who cares? You know, all these great lyricists
right.
and artists, and nobody, you know, even says a peep about them.
Well, my problem is that I don't know where to find it.
Right.
You know, I don't know where these shows. I don't know where you play.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I remember I would see Overlord because he would play at places that I played or that. I mean,
right.
I don't know where to look. I don't see.
Yeah. And the thing, you know, and with that,
do you guys play like festival? I mean, do you play at like
ACL and Fun Fest and?
Yeah, I mean, does someone
yeah.
like Fun Fest have like a hip hop?
Yeah,
scene?
A few locals have played at some of those festivals, but it's not a yearly thing, which I think it should be. I think there should always be at least 2 to 3 hip hop acts
yeah.
on every festival that comes through here. You know.
Yeah. I
mean, and that's, you know,
it's such a giant part
yeah,
of the world.
Exactly.
You know,
you got to have full representation of all the talent in Austin, and hip hop doesn't get that. Like you say, like you don't see it on the cover of the Chronicle all the time, but various rock acts put out an album and they're the front of the Chronicle.
Yeah.
So they get that.
Well, it's
that
almost,
buzz
it's almost
press.
Like a backwards place of the world when
totally.
The world, like hip hop is so much bigger than rock everywhere.
Yeah.
You come to Austin, it's like, what?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So back in the late 80s and early 90s, things were going gangster, and and you did not. You did.
I pulled out of it. You know what I mean? It just got to the point where.
Was there like a certain? Sorry to interrupt you, but was it because there was a certain tone of anger, but you didn't have it?
No, it was like, you know, I was definitely angered. You know what I mean? Like, there was definitely the racial tension, still is, and all those things existed. But with my music, it's like, you know, I saw, like, Austin was nowhere near what L.A. was when N.W.A. came out as far as.
Oh, yeah,
you
know,
nowhere near. So the gangster stories in Austin were still kind of timid. You know what I mean? They weren't really that shoot 'em up, rough stuff. But I didn't want to rap about that because I wasn't riding around shooting up people.
Right. And that wasn't your life.
So the group I was in, you know, we added a new member and we was all, and I just pulled out the group. I was like, you guys can keep the name and go the direction you want to go. And then that was like the start of the T-Double solo career at that point where I was like.
Which was what year?
Oh my God. Maybe, I don't know, 85, 80, I don't know.
That was somewhere. Really early.
Yeah, so we were in that group.
I mean, that like precedes, I was Run DMC, didn't even have records out in 85?
Yeah, we were in that group for a few years, and I just pulled out, and it broke my heart because, you know, these were my best friends. Because back then when you made a group with your best friends.
Yeah,
it's not like now TV shows can put five guys together from different parts of town who never knew each other. Back then it was like your friends, so it was like, man, you know.
Or now nowadays you try and get a good drummer, but back then it was like, you just want Steve.
Yeah,
you
I know want Steve I mean? Next yeah. door because yeah, 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 his mom yeah. makes a mean stew.
Yeah.
You know, but it was just, you know, but it was the right thing for me.
Yeah.
I felt like it was right for me to just step away and just let the music be what it was for a minute and let me just kind of chill and say, okay, let me keep making my music, but let me not be so public right now and just...
Yeah, just kind of woodshed, yeah, like just go back to the drawing board and figure out what your next thing is going to be.
Exactly. Like our last song together was a song called Give Me That Gangster Cut, and where we sampled some Ice Cube in there, and it was probably like my only... It was my only gangster track that we made, and I think after that session, 30 minutes later, I left the group.
Okay. All right.
You know, because we attempted it.
Yeah.
You know, because we were all friends and we were like, let's try it. You know, let's see. So we made that song. I wasn't feeling it.
Right.
The song was great.
So, like, but at the time you didn't, did you, you, but you weren't, you don't, I mean, your music, while it's not like, you know, overtly angry and aggressive or anything, it also isn't candy ass.
Right.
Like Vanilla Ice or something.
Right. I found there's many ways to get your point across. Like, my music, if you listen to a lot of my songs, I talk about the music industry.
Yeah.
I talk about the owning of your rights in your music.
Yeah.
I talk about publishing. I've talked about the racism in the town and in the world. I cover all those issues. I do it in an artistic way that by the time you catch on to what I'm talking about, you've heard the whole song. So it's basically subliminally in your mind, you know, and you got to find other ways to get your point across, you know. So I found those ways. And it's, you know, and it's worked, you know, it's worked for like, you know, 18 plus albums.
Yeah.
You know, none of my albums are, you know, like you say, none of them are soft. None of them are candy ass. None of them are skirting the issues. They're all right there on every song.
Right. So when did you put out your first official album? Was that in the 80s?
Oh, my God. Yeah. It was.
Later 80s?
Yeah.
After?
It was, you know.
And how did you put it out? Did you put it out yourself? Did you have investors or did you?
Yeah, I got, you know, I went and bought a whole bunch of cassettes.
Yeah.
And back then they used to have, you know, the little white labels that you could put on the cassette for your band.
Yeah.
And I would write on everyone, you know, T-Double. You know, I didn't have I think one of my first record labels I started was called Poor Boy Records because I was a poor boy. Mm-hmm. So I would get like 20 cassettes, press them up, go to school, sell each cassette for $5, use some of that to eat lunch with, take the rest to go buy more cassettes. Always invested back into what I was doing.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's how I started off until CDs came around and started doing that. And, you know, I've done a lot of projects, man. It's crazy.
So then what did you do? Like, okay, then the 90s came and you were still prolific putting out records.
Right.
Where were you at the time? Like, what was your scene? What was your group like? Did you have a group or was it just you?
No, I was never in the, you know, I've done guest spots on other records, but I never was in a group per se.
Okay.
But at that time, like, you know, late 87, so and so, there was Project Crew, which was a local town with a guy named DJ Casanova, and he moved here from New York. So he brought the whole idea of mixtapes down here, and, you know, I used to hang around at his house when he made music, and he taught me how to work drum machines, and that's when I started getting more technical by dealing with him. And then I just, you know, said, maybe I should just buy me some more equipment and really get into this production thing, because at that point, if I didn't know how to work a drum machine, I had to get somebody who did. And I always felt like I created so much, I didn't want to wait to call somebody and say, hey, Danny, what are you doing tonight? Are you busy? Okay, tomorrow. Because I want to make songs now.
Yeah.
So then I started learning the more of the technical end and saying, okay, this is where I need to go. And then I got involved with American Institute for Learning. I don't think they're still around here, though. But that's where they helped, you know, kids like at-risk youth, I guess you could call them, who were kind of in transition. Like, do we want to go to college? Do we want
to... Did you go to
be
college?
On the street? I went for a little bit, but then I left because, you know, I wanted to do the music.
Right. Yeah,
and that was a thing where, you know, the family was like, I don't know, because music is so risky.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I was involved with that, and we put out a CD called Tribes. And it was this, the program was, which I wish they did more of, where they got kids together, and some were getting GEDs, some were in transition, all these things, and they taught us the music business. You know, and our first gift from them was a book on the music business. And we would have quizzes.
Which was
on
what? Which one?
It was an old one called, I think it was just called, music? No, not that. It was just called The Music Business. It was like a small it wasn't a Donald Passman series.
Right, that's the Passman one.
It was just like a small little blue book. And we would have quizzes. You know, she would give us quizzes. Jan Bozarth is her name.
Yeah, Jan Bozarth is a friend of mine.
Yeah. Well, I was in her program for Tribe. So that's where I really got my start on making records. She's like my second mom.
She's Cuban too.
Yeah, she's like my second mom.
Yeah.
So doing that project, I was like, wow, you know, making records is, you know, she took us to a huge studio. First big board I recorded on was like an API, and I learned all that. And then through that, I met Robert Skiles, Beto.
Yeah, her husband. Ex-husband.
Yeah, and I was featured on Salsified.
Yeah, I read that on here.
The Beto and the Fairlanes album. So I guess you could say, if you could break that down, I'd be like the only rapper that ever recorded on an Antone's label, because Antone's was distributing Dose,
right,
which was distributing
right,
their record.
Yeah.
So I'm like the only Austin hip hop artist to ever be associated with Antone's records like that.
So you have a really, when I got your, it's definitely not a one sheet, and it's not a bio. I mean, it's literally a five sheet, one sheet.
Yeah.
And so obviously 18 albums and a lot of years of doing this get you a long thing, but let's touch on some things.
Okay.
Are you on the board of governors for the Texas chapter of the Grammys?
I got added to the ballot for that. They're voting on that right now. But that's like huge. That's like,
that is,
to come from, you know, where I started here in Austin, to be acknowledged for my talent, to even be asked to be on that is amazing. But so we'll see about that.
You had a song on Breaking Bad?
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
And so who handles that for you? Are you the one that does that?
I do it all. I do it all.
And you performed on the show Roller Girls that was out a couple of years ago that was filmed here. And so you just, you manage yourself.
I do it all.
You do it all.
I do it all.
And so what are you, like on your computer and phone all day? Like
all day.
Sending shit out to people?
Yeah, that's why I tell people, I'm like, you know, they're like, well, I want to send you an email, but I'm like, if you send me an email, I'll probably write you back within 3 minutes because I'm always on my email. I'm always on social media, Facebook, Twitter. I do my own website. You know, I do all the Dreamweaver. I do all that. I do all my booking, my management, my licensing. I do all that. With the licensing, I have a firm out of New York that handles 14 of my albums, you know, because I didn't want a completely exclusive deal to lock in all my records where I can still submit other songs to other supervisors and other things on my own. So I don't limit my revenue stream.
Right.
But they, you know, they're the ones who did the Breaking Bad placement and a few other things that I got going on in the UK. And so, but I'm, you know, I'm a one man show, man. I'm, you know, if you can't make it happen yourself and you don't believe in yourself that much to do it, then you might be in the wrong business.
I have a tough time selling myself. And I think a lot of other artists do. I don't know why. I feel kind of like,
I do too. You know what I mean? Like sometimes I'll meet people and they might find out, you know, I'll meet them as Tyranny.
Yeah.
And then later on they'll find out, you know, I'm T-Double.
Yeah.
And they're like, why didn't you tell me you were that dude? And I was like, it feels weird. Like when I'm with my friends or family, they do all that for me. They're like, oh, did you know that Tyranny is, you know, got his own day in Austin?
Right.
You know what I mean? Because I don't walk around and say, hey, you know, September 30th is T-Double Day. I don't do that. Like most people don't even know.
That's one of my favorite days now.
Yeah, there you go.
September 30th.
There you go.
I'm going to celebrate it.
Do it.
I think I had a day too. I mean, I did. I just don't know. Do you get to keep the day?
Yeah. It's actually, you know, another story with that.
So I think they gave my day away to some other guy.
That sucks. Actually, with that is like, I'll talk to the mayor for you.
Please.
But with that, I think with the day, that's actually my second day. Our first day that I got was back when I was working with Jan Bozarth, and we got Tribes Day in Austin, which is March. I'm not quite sure. It's been so long, but right. It's March, maybe March 13th. So that was the first time we went to the city council. They gave us a little thing to the city in the shape of a music note for your own day. And then, you know, it's crazy. It comes full circle, and now I got T-Double Days.
And you know, so I'm blessed. You also have a couple of music awards, one for Best Experimental.
Yeah.
What is that? What does that
mean?
That
was when I was with Boombox ATX.
Oh, yeah. So you were with them.
Yeah, I was with Overlord and all
so
that.
So then I have seen you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so we did that, and we won Best Experimental, which was really cool, you know, because we didn't really go out and, you know, try to get votes like a lot of people do. It was just
I've never tried to do that.
Yeah, it was just like, oh, Austin Music Awards, that's cool. You know, so we told a few people, hey, you know, we might, you know, that'd be cool if we win.
Yeah.
And then we won.
Then you did. Yeah. So what I don't quite know how to bridge the past to now, except for like there's a bazillion albums.
Yep.
You've won awards. You've done these tours. Like, what are you doing now? You just when did you put out this record? When did you say you put out Goddess Galactic?
Yeah, I put out Goddess Galactic like February 1st, maybe something
like that. Okay, this year, 2012.
Yeah. Okay, it's brand new. I've done you know, because the Austin Convention Bureau, they put out compilations every year as well. So I've done a couple of those. They did one solely on soul music in Austin, which I thought was a beautiful idea.
That's
that they take
idea.
To different conferences or whatever. So I think, you know, myself and Afro Freak is on there. So we're the only hip-hop oriented thing on there. So, you know, I'm always looking for projects. I'm always trying to involve myself with new projects, work with new artists. You know what I mean? I've done, performed with Bob Schneider before.
He's a good rapper.
Yeah.
And he can freestyle.
He is good.
And so can John Pointer.
Yep. Yep. You know, because John was in Boombox as well.
Yeah.
So... And, you know, me and Tony Scalzo worked on a few songs for Fastball. So, you know, I learned early on that if you're in Austin, you have to step outside of your hip-hop box if you want to really maintain here. Because if you stay in your own small hip-hop box, that's a real small thing. But if you want to grow, there's so many other talented musicians that you can interact with and, you know, and bring more attention to what you're doing as well to bring more attention to what they're doing. So now, kind of like to get to your answer, now I'm doing a lot of licensing where...
there's a lot of business in your day. It's not
tons
just
of
sitting
business.
Around
tons,
thinking
you know,
about ass rhymes.
Exactly. Tons of business. It's like, you know, I can freestyle all day and do that and that's fun, but then, okay, how are you going to pay the mortgage?
Yeah, who's going to
You know, it's still real life. But I learned early on that licensing was going to be the new radio. And,
it is.
And, and with that, it's like, you know, you look at a commercial and in the corner of the commercial it says, you know, Sting, new song, album, whatever. It's the new radio. So...
And if you don't have it, everybody has some kind of hold your phone up to it. And if you like the jam, you get it.
Yeah, you can find it. You know, and it's better than a record deal. It's better than selling records because, you know, usually with licensing, you get paid up front. You get paid directly, you know, and there's many deals. You know, there's many variables in the deal. We can split publishing. You can split the master. They can do an all-in deal where they buy it all and. You know, so I learned all these things and, you know, and I have a great firm in New York where they don't sell my music till I say yes.
Okay.
And I made sure that was in my agreement with them because I want to be the one that says yes or
no. So there is a group out there licensing your stuff for you.
Yeah.
But you still have to deal with it when it comes through.
Exactly. I have to keep creating music or I lose my deal. I have to keep creating quality music. Like I can't send them. Something I made that's just
so it's your like
together.
A quota. What do you got to send in 5 songs a month or something?
No, it's whatever I want it to be.
Okay,
but I try to.
But you keep it high.
Yeah,
I try to
send at least 10 to 20 new songs
a month.
A month to them.
Wow, you're really
so. And those are, and those are songs that you know I'm not releasing. A lot of those are unreleased songs that they're getting that they could you know. And sometimes I get an email that says we want a song about a Chevrolet with this feel, with that this, with these words, with this. Emotion.
Yeah.
So a lot of my songs are original songs written for the campaigns.
Oh, okay.
So, and you know, with the Breaking Bad thing, they found something on one of my older albums and was like, they like that track. They want to use it. You know, we agreed on the terms and boom.
It's really incredible. I mean, it's a really big show.
Yep.
Really, you know, profound show.
Yep.
And so what else? Are you doing shows or anything now? Are you planning any tours? What did you do in support for your record?
Every now and then I do a show. Like, I'm not really heavy into the gigging every week thing, unless I'm with friends like Boombox Again or something like that. Because, you know, the promoters aren't really paying, so it's not really worth my time to go out there and week after week and perform.
But do you feel like you lose your, do you get rusty at all if you don't?
No, because, you know, I go support, you know, younger artists. There's a whole new crop of artists who need those opportunities to be seen and perform. So I go support them. I get on stage with them. You know,
where do they play? Like, where do you play? Like, when you play, where do you play? Not with Boombox, but where does T-Double play?
Sometimes I do, you know, festivals like the Dave Dart thing here, there, everywhere.
Right, yeah, of course.
You know, when different things come up, I do it. Like, I'm real selective on where I perform and
with who,
what the show is and with who and who the sponsor is. And, you know, because, you know, I feel like I'm at that point in my career where I can kind of make those decisions now. Whereas when I was younger, you just rapped anywhere. Yeah. Like, okay, so-and-so sponsoring. Okay, I don't drink beer and I don't smoke cigarettes, but they're there, I'm performing.
Yeah.
But then you don't think about, okay, they're not paying me to perform from the sponsorship money.
No.
So the business thought, you know, kind of kicks in later, and that's what I try to teach and share with newer artists, even older artists, about how to really maintain your career and how to really get your business right where you can be respected on that business level.
How to get paid.
How to get paid and not just be looked at, you know, as a rapper. Like, there's plenty of rappers, but how many are businessmen can go in there and have terms and...
And are a brand.
Yeah. And have, you know, and have enough music and have enough clout behind you where what you're saying means something.
Yeah.
And achievements that it means something. So I fight for a lot of artists because, you know, like I say, with me being on different advisory boards for Awesome Music Foundation and this
right.
and that.
Right. You're on that.
Yeah.
Currently.
So I can go to different places that the normal hip hop artists couldn't.
Right.
And speak on their behalf and say, why don't we have more things catered to hip hop here? Why don't we have more funds for the arts allocated for urban music here?
Right.
So that's kind of like where I'm at now, where it's like, I don't want other artists keep making the same mistakes I made back, you know, in the early 80s, right. Stumbling. Now I'm in a position where I can, like, kind of get the playing field level.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
No, it totally makes sense.
Okay.
And so you're feeling good and you're out there.
Yeah, I'm blessed, man. You know, it's like every day I can wake up and take a breath, I'm blessed. And for me to be able to do my childhood dream, you know what I mean? It's like a lot of people start off with a dream.
Yeah.
And then as they grow older, that dream kind of fades to the back because of marriage, kids, daily jobs, you know, band members. And, you know, your band is not as supportive of what you want to do as you. And I'm blessed to be able to have that focus at an early age that, you know, like I say, since I was eight, I recorded first at nine, but at eight, I was like, I'm going to do music. You know, my mom will tell you, like, that's all I wanted to do was music. My brother was an athlete and an artist, and he could draw the most realistic anything you could put in front of him. That's what he did.
Right.
My thing was music, always.
Well, it takes everything you got, you know, to make it in this, you know. And it seems like you really found a way, you know. I was just looking through your extensive fact sheet again, and it's amazing for someone that's done so much for so long that you can this isn't all stuff from like 1993 or something. It's
right.
Like very, very current. Like
right.
You're still very, very active.
Right.
You know, even with the Texas Music Museum, with the Austin Convention and Visitors Bureau,
yep.
Winning international songwriting competitions and things like that.
Right.
That it's amazing that you're still in that place. So at this point. Now when you're writing, how much has it changed from back then? Do you take samples of other songs and use like a few measures of it? And then do you said like this, the first song that we heard when we came in, that was from a record?
Yeah. A lot of the stuff that I do now, because I do the licensing, where with the licensing situation, you make more money with the less samples you make.
Of course.
So you
right.
So I'm at the point now where I'm becoming more musical as far as reading music, learning music, music theory.
And you have drum machines.
Pianos.
And
I still got the drum machines and the samplers and all that. But now I'm to the point now where I can really put a lot of my ideas directly down on my keyboard myself. Mm-hmm. Where if you hear them, you'll think that's a sample.
Right.
Or that's, you know, that's from this record. Well, it's not. I just manipulated my own sounds
right.
to make that. So now, you know, I still sample. I still do all that. That's the core of hip hop. But to get into licensing and all those other things, you have to kind of pull that out and get more creative.
Right. And when you do shows as TW, do you ever incorporate a live band? Have you ever done that? Like, you know, Overlord always used to use Vallejo and the Dirty Worms had their thing. And
Overlord set the standard for that. Overlord is an overlooked gem.
Where is he? I hate to ask that question.
Yeah, he's still here and he's still doing music. He has a Big Don, which is, he does the children's music now, hip hop.
Yeah.
And that's going great for him. But he was the first guy to really be down at Steamboat on 6th Street with a live band.
Yeah.
And when people think of hip hop,
it was Vallejo was his band.
Yeah. They don't really think of Overlord, you know, and that's kind of like what I do. I try to give people props who deserve it. Like he said,
that's who I think of.
Yeah. He set it off. He was the first, like when we were on the East Side doing our thing, Overlord was downtown.
Right.
He really kicked in those doors where they would even listen to hip hop.
Right. Where were you on the East Side doing your thing at different small bars?
Yeah, like Doris Miller Auditorium. That was like the main place where they had shows at. A lot of things was just me at home, me rapping at my friend's house, me rapping to my mom. And
that must be really frustrating.
Yeah.
To live in the live music capital of the world and have to be at your house trying to figure out how to break out of the fucking East Side to get over into
downtown. And
it's
downtown. Still that way now. You know what I mean? Like there's groups over there now. Like how can I get a show at whatever on 6th Street? How can I do this, whatever, you know, and get paid for it? Like, they'll book you, you know, but, you know, you won't get any of the bar money. You won't get any of the drink money. You probably won't get any of the door money. But they'll book you for a show, and they'll tell you it's exposure for what you're doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that gets kind of old. You know, of course, you need a few free shows. Everybody does. But eventually it gets to the point where, okay, now you have exposure.
You ever think about making just going like totally punk rock style and going like beer land and stuff like that and having nights
where
they don't even charge cover or have liquor? You know what I mean?
I'll perform anywhere and I'll set up a show anywhere if it benefits the culture. You know what I mean? If it benefits what I'm doing. I'm real tight on that. Like I won't do a show just anywhere just to have a hip hop show there. It has to be accessible for the people to come. It has to be a decent sound system. They have to respect hip-hop. Like a lot of places, you know, you'll perform and then they'll cut your show short because they're tired of all the rapping and scratching, but that's not part of the agreement. You have to come in there. You know, now I'm like, okay, let's get it on contract, so I get door, I get some of the bar, I keep the venue till x amount of time, and then I let the younger acts perform. That, you know, and if I can't do it like that, then I don't do it, and a lot of venues won't do that, which is why you don't see me promoting a lot of shows that I put on, because I don't want to jump through the hoops like that.
Whoops. That's good. I mean, standing by your guns and doing your thing, you know. So where can people find your music or find out when you're going to be playing? What's your, you're on Facebook under It's T-E-E, the word double. Is there a dash?
Yeah.
T-double.
Yeah. Okay. Or you can go to T-double.com, which is, you know, all one word, T-E-E-double.com. And, you know, and on there you can see videos from me being on tour. You can see, because of space, I can only fit like 12 albums on the front page. But, you know, you can see those. You can buy albums. You can see my bio. You can see other things I'm doing licensing-wise with, you know, sporting good companies and, you know, all that. I try to make it real friendly user.
And you're working with other – in your bio you talk about whatever your brand. Sorry, here we go. You're branching out into songwriting, producing, and bringing your brand,
right?
Of urban music for movies, commercials, TV, lifestyle, and so on. So you're working with other acts and bringing them to that, sort of being a conduit.
Yeah, I partner with other companies, like-minded companies who are growing their brand. Like now, I'm working with FME Culture, which is out of LA, California, actually, and They're working with Arnett, which does a lot of snowboarding and those type of things. They're building the Olympic team, and they're doing all this. So they're incorporating my music into those campaigns.
Fantastic.
So my music is out there in so many places, but not in the normal places you would look.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
so.
Yeah. But they can find you at T-double.com.
T-double.com.
Is there anything else I'm missing? You know what I was going to ask you about is that I wanted to talk about the culture of battling. Do you battle?
I used to. Battling was how I first really got my start on the, I guess, the bigger stage of Austin music.
Okay.
Where I used to go to KVRX, and they used to have, like, House of Fat Beats, and, you know, I would go there, and just, when any group came to town, my goal was to battle them. You know, if...
It's so fiercely competitive. Like, that really is not in, like, the rock world or in the open mic thing. Like, Like, you know what I mean? Like, people, I like it because it actually makes people get better.
Yeah. It's and we would do it live on the air. You know, if a group was there on the air doing an interview and there wasn't a local artist also being interviewed during that show, I would go to battle. I've always been like, Austin deserves the attention just as much as anybody else. So many local,
Is there a style? I mean, is there like an Austin?
No, and that's the beautiful thing
about
it.
There's not. It's just...
Yeah, it's like if you think of Houston.
Yeah, there's a style.
There's Houston style. There's Houston music. And to give you a story on Houston, you know, when Paul Wall and Mike Jones and that whole scene broke, a lot of their stuff was produced by Carnival Beats. And Carnival Beats is actually from Austin. So Austin defined the Houston sound.
That's weird. So, well, there you go.
There you go.
So is there anything else I'm missing? Like, what are you? Is there anything people should look out for? Just from TW.
Just keep going to, you know, TW. That's okay. I get that all. I get TW. I get double T. I get, you know, and it's cool with me. It's funny with me. But like, you know, just go to TW.com and that's where you can find everything that I'm doing. And I'm always out in the streets at the shows. You know, I'm still in the pit, as I call it. You know, with the younger artists when they're out rapping and doing shows. I try to go to support.
I want to stay in touch because I want to see these younger artists.
Yeah, I try to go and support because if we don't support our own culture, then nobody else is. So
it's true. It's true. Ladies and gentlemen, TW.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming by. I'm glad that we met.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right, man. You guys take care. It's a fantastic dude, TW. I really liked my conversation with him, man. He's a really nice guy. I'm actually going to get together with him next week. Well, whenever, by the time this airs, I will have already gotten together with him. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. I'd like to thank T-Double for coming by. That was great to sit down and talk to him and get his perspective on the music business. And also, maybe I'll get introduced to a little bit more hip-hop here in town or even all around, stuff I don't know. I'm working on a catchphrase. I tried it out a few months ago. It didn't really take. Let's get down. It's my catchphrase. Let's get down. So anyway, I'd like to thank T-Double again. And listen, subscribe to us on iTunes. And you can hear us on your mobile phone or iPad or whatever on Stitcher.com or Stitcher the app. And also, like us on Facebook. How did I get here? Fun is, it's a Facebook page. All right. Once again, here's T-Double. Let's get down.
I landed in a spaceship in this little place with no communication. Block transmission, gravity too strong, can't uplift them. Jetpack empty, space boots heavy, scan the terrain. Search for natives, no way to explain how I made it. Sky covered in fire, it's hazy. Every second that passes amazed me. I came across a village of scientists banned by the government simply for defying it. Found the antidote to truth in designing it. It's an audio frequency, come see. Shown test subjects, perfect pitch. Ask if I like to try pure nervousness. Flip the switch, felt so electric, electric. Star child, star child. Felt levitated, heat generated, opened my third eye, heart started racing. I had visions of days coming, armies, trumpets, must do something, stop bluffing. When I awoke, I was asked what I saw. There's a way we can utilize the serum, of course. Kids listen to tones, combine to make songs. Let's create a structure, couldn't take long. Modulate synthesis, add vocals on. Words appear on paper, my genetic makeup is altered to the shape of an MC. Kango Adidas concrete under feet in a new reality. Please hurry, hurry. Equipped with MP and styles to be free. Please hurry, hurry. Star child, star child. We'll be right back.
potentials with instrumentals placed under mentals displayed in ciphers. Spoke of the current state, we in an urgent place. Organize, use every word as blades, blades. And we'll be met by defiance by other MCs who have pledged alliance to the big three or the big two. Who's the big one in charge of you? You. Visual trickery, they're so slippery, make you wear jewelry stupidly, stupidly, to go against the positive energy and blind it to your obvious enemies. New breed, new breed. Who needs someone to dictate my dreams? My dream. And when I might check, it's slow time. I fell asleep 5 minutes till showtime. What?